It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with France. So we're continuing with France. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushu Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
There we go.
Thank you, bus people.
Yeah. Thank you, bus people. Beautiful day. Beautiful day here in Florida.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we had rain yesterday, but, you know, when it clears out, it really, our sky turns back to blue again, which doesn't last very long, but the sky turns back to blue again for a little, you know, a little while. And right. It's just a fantastic day today. I mean, we did get some rain early this morning, but it really turned out to be nice. And real quick, before we get our guest on the air, which I'll do in a minute here, if you're interested, if you're on Twitter and you would like to stay in touch with the show and find out what's coming up on it and all that kind of stuff, the best thing to do is follow us on Twitter. Go to twitter.com/allaboutwineBTR. BTR as in Blog Talk Radio. All About Wine BTR, no spaces or anything like that. Go to Twitter and be sure to follow us there because that's what we post to. And not now because it's messed up, but Blog Talk Radio and Twitter are not talking to each other right now. they had some kind of argument and they're not talking to each other.
Mad at the other and they're not talking.
Yes, yes. So we're trying to get that straightened out. But as soon as we do, we'll resume updates on there. But if you're following the old account, don't do that. Update it and follow us on Twitter.com, allaboutwineBTR. Okay? That's the way to go. And back to you. I'm going to go get our guest.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll talk to you in a little bit. Mike's going to jump out here and make a phone call and try to get our guest. And our guest is Judy, and I'm not sure, Nisley, I believe it's pronounced N-I-S-S-L-E-Y, Nisley, of Nisley Vineyard and Winery Estate. This is in Pennsylvania. We are still in Pennsylvania. We will be in Pennsylvania next week also. We have a lawyer on us next week, a wine lawyer. So that should be interesting. That should be a lot of fun. Talking about the legalities of a vineyard or winery and what some of the legal stuff involves with it there. Always got to be right with the law. And if you follow the programs, you know I've always asked people how the government treats them, how the state treats them, all that. It's all legal mumbo jumbo. And next week when the lawyer comes on, his name is Jason Raymer, he's going to be talking to us about legalities and all that. So that should be an interesting program. Not to make tonight's program any less interesting, Judy from Nisley Vineyards will be joining us in a few minutes here. Mike's going to be contacting her, and we'll get her on. We'll talk about Nisley Vineyard. Don't want to tell you too much about it because I'll have her tell you about it, but it is located in Bainbridge, Pennsylvania. Bainbridge is southwest of Philadelphia, southeast of Hershey, in that area there. They have quite a few wines, quite a few events, all sorts of stuff going on there. Their website is really a pretty nice website. They have a bunch of information there and everything. So I see Judy is sitting over there waiting for us to come on, so why don't we bring on the air? Hello, Judy. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, how are you this evening?
I am doing really well. Thanks for taking the time out and coming on All About Wine. Tell us about, first, before I go into anything else, is the last name pronounced Nisley?
That's correct.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I didn't want to pronounce it wrong. Tell us about Nisley Vineyards and Winery Estates.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I heard you mentioning our website, and I cringe when some people go into our website because it's sort of an old one and it's sort of clunky, and we're about to change it. So you actually, what you see there, though, are in the picture section, that's pretty representative. And we've been here since 1978. It was started by my dad, J. Richard Nisley. So on all of our wine labels, we say produced and bottled by the J. Richard Nisley family. And he's no longer with us, but he's the one who got us started, and he had this property. There are actually three farms sort of strung together, bordering each other, in western Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. It's a lot of acreage, and about 400 acres altogether. And out of those 400 acres, some of it's farmed, but 50 of those acres are planted in vines. So that's what we use for most of our wines. On a day-to-day basis, what we do, of course, is do whatever is required in the vineyards, do the winemaking, handle the wine shop. It's just sort of a very, I'd like to say it's sort of a gentle process, although some days, of course, we are in a hurry-up mode. But it's a very calm, relaxing place to come. So, anyway.
It's probably
pretty much like any other winery. It's very calming when you go to a winery.
We hope so, anyway.
Yeah.
Let's talk. You mentioned 50 acres. Let's talk about the vineyard for a while here. What do you have planted?
Well, we have mostly French hybrids planted. We've got varieties that, when we first started, nobody had ever heard of them. For the whites, it would be Vidal Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc. We later planted some Cayuga. It's also a French hybrid, although it sounds like a really strange name. That wine is weird because by the name, it would sound as though it might be a Native American, but it's really a French-American hybrid. Then in the we also have Vignoles. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. Sometimes people call that grape ravat. We stopped doing that because people called it rabbit, which sounded like rabbit, and so we got away. So we use the Vignoles name for that. And all of those are made into, what am I trying to say here? What's the word when it's all one grape?
Varietal.
Thank you. Yes, bingo. It made into a varietal. We also use them in some of our blends. So we have multiple wines that have a little more complexity, and it just gives us a little more variety in terms of the flavors that we can produce. So those are the whites, and then for the reds we have Chambersan, which in this area grows really well. It's just a really, really nice grape, but it is a French hybrid, and I guess for people who are more familiar with the viniferous style of grapes that are grown, for example, in California, the Chambersan has a much more fruit-forward character. It has less tannin. It does not have the harsh tannin that the vinifera varietals have. So in this area particularly, people really like our wines because they're not so ponderous, and they're just really easy to drink, I guess I would say, because of that. And the Chancellor, which we also grow, has the same characteristic. And then we grow Deschonac, which hardly anybody grows that grape because it ends up tasting a little bit like a tea. And I never say this name correctly, but maybe you've heard of it. Lapsang Souchong.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's a tea that it has a character, and people either really hate that flavor or they love that flavor. So we, for example, use that one in a blend that we call Naughty Marietta, which is it's named after a local town of Marietta and also for an operetta that was really popular when my mother was, I guess, coming of age. She's the one who named it.
We won't go into that any further then.
I've never seen it, but oh my goodness, we've had that name for years. That's one of our very original wines. And so, you know, we started in 1978, so we've been making that wine for, 34 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long time. Anyway, so what else do we have? Oh, we have fruit wines, and we started on these because it was just such a natural, you know, in this area, not necessarily right next to us, but in the next county over, oh my goodness, they grow wonderful fruits. So we make an apple wine. It's just what I call a naked apple wine. It doesn't have any flavorings or spices or anything, and it's just apple wine. It's just really good. And also two cherry wines. And then the one that, well, my gosh, recently it won the best of show in a Pennsylvania wine competition for the best fruit and dessert wine. It's called Black Raspberry.
Uh-huh.
And that is a really, really luscious wine. So, you know, we really have a full complement of a lot of different wines. And this mainly occurred because as we started, you know, we started 34 years ago, we had all dry wines. And people would come and say, well, okay, I want a wine like, it tastes like what my grandfather used to make.
Nice.
Said, oh, my goodness, what is that? So then we brought in the Native American grapes, and, of course, those taste really weird if you try to make those in a dry style.
Yeah.
They're really weird. So they had to be sweet. So, of course, then they introduced sweet wines. And then people said, well, gee whiz, I don't want something that sweet. I don't want something that dry. So, okay, so we made some semi-dry and semi-sweet wine. So we developed the whole range. And now our problem is, I got to tell you this because it is so weird. People keep saying, you know, some of our customers have been with us for a long, long time. And they say, okay, what's new? and when they say that, I go, oh, brother. Because in order to introduce a new wine, we have to either add one more, it hardly fits on the list, or knock something else off the list.
Right.
So, anyway, that's the...
I come across that all the time, too. People say, you know, regulars come back and say, have you added anything new? And I say, well, if I do, I'm really going to have to drop one of my wines. I said, and there's people are fond of all of them, so I don't know which one to drop. So, no, there's nothing new because I don't know, I don't have any of them to get rid of. So,
mm-hmm.
Same...
Well, I'm not familiar with where you are. Where are you?
Florida.
You're in Florida. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask the obvious question. Do you make orange wine?
Yes, I do. I make an orange wine.
Do you really?
I make an orange wine and a key lime wine. I tell you what, let me get, you know, a little while we're on the program, go to the winery's website. It's Florida, www.floridaestates, with an S, wines, with an S, floridaestateswines.com.
Okay.
And it shows everything. That actually, it's really out of date. Ours is out of date, too. Mike is going to fix that and take out some of the wines. So there's a list of Chilean wines there that we no longer carry. So we need to get Mike on there and have him wipe those out and update our site, but it lists the ones that we do make and ignore the Chilean ones, and so that's really the best way to see what we do there.
Well, can you grow vinifera grapes easily there, or do not?
Actually, no, we don't grow them easily. It's impossible to grow vinifera grapes here because of Pierce disease. the glassy wing sharpshooter, which is a carrier of a disease called Pierce disease. Pierce disease gets into the grapevines and kills them.
Yes.
So University of Florida has been doing genetic research for years, trying to come up with plants that will survive in Florida. These are the ones that I use.
Good.
So, but yeah, enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Well, but see, I'm really interested in what you have to say. That's okay. I don't mind talking.
If you have questions about it, I'll be happy to answer, and that's not a problem. I noticed, though, that you have on your list here, you have a Merlot listed, you have a Cabernet Franc listed. Are those the ones that you do, or do you bring the juice in, or you no longer do them, or what's the word?
No, we do them. I'm sorry, I did not mention them. We did add those. Those are more recent on our list. We grow a small amount of each of those, amount of Merlot, and most of our Merlot grapes come from a winery near us called Waltz Vineyards. I believe you were talking with Kim last week.
Yeah.
Waltz Vineyards. Yeah. Okay, so they're not...
He grows.
Yeah. Yeah, he grows those for us, some for us and some for himself. But anyway, so those are the Merlot, but we do grow our own Cabernet Franc. And I have this funny thing about our Cabernet Franc because it ends up being very, I call it a light-bodied red. And I couldn't come to grips with this. And I would go to other meetings of wineries in Pennsylvania, and they would serve their Cabernet Franc. And I looked at them and said, how did you get this rich body in your wine? And they'd look at me like I was half crazy. And I finally quit asking the question because I thought that, you know, there's something wrong with the question. And so then I said it to my brother one day. We were in a wine trial and we were tasting wines. I said, John, I said, you know, you're in charge of the vineyards. What gives with our Cabernet Franc? Why is it so light-bodied? And he said, oh, it's the clone. I said, what? He said, it's the specific clone. I said, well, why did you buy a light-bodied clone? He said, because it was what was available. The thing is, see, this is part of the problem when you do this. You know, of course, you buy the vines, and they've been grown in a nursery, and you plant them, and it takes a lot of time and attention to get the darn thing planted and put in all the posts and the wires and all this. And by the time you wait 3 years to get a crop, you say, So this happens, and the result of it is my one sister really likes medium-bodied reds. She said she doesn't like the heavy reds, and I got to tell you, in the summertime, I think medium to light red is the way to go because you get a high alcohol, really, really rich, chewy wine in the summer, and it's almost hard to drink it. So anyway, what our winemaker does is bleeds the juice out so that at the start, bleeds some of the juice away before it goes through, the primary fermentation where the color is going to, affect it. So he bleeds that out, and that becomes a very, very nice rosé in the French style, which is how the French make rosé. You know, here we tend to cheat a little bit sometimes, and I don't call it cheat. It's just a different way of making it. You take a white wine and add a little bit of red to it. And
that's how I make mine. Yeah, I blend. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this other way is more in the French style. And the rosé is really very – it's a lovely rosé from this wine. So, anyway.
I'm a big fan of the Cab Franc. I just absolutely love the Cabernet Franc. It's such a unique grape. I've said this on the program before. Such a unique grape, and it just really is ignored too much, I think, because it just comes out with just a beautiful wine. And just any style, like the lighter style or the heavier style, it's got some really unique flavors and taste. I'm a big Cab Franc fan.
Well, my understanding is that Cabernet Franc was the grandfather of Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yes, that and... Oh, I get a blank now. I talked about it before on a program a couple years back. And, yeah, okay. The Cabernet Franc was the grandfather and long crossbred. And they're saying now that the Cabernet Sauvignon was done in the wild, too. It wasn't a deliberate clone. It was something that something I read just recently said that they're tracing it back to something that was actually done in the wild. So, interesting.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking at your wine list here, and you know, quite a few wines there, and a lot of medals. Congrats on that too. That's, you know, great list of medals on all those. The Cayuga, is that
well,
sweet?
We don't use that. You wouldn't see that on our list because I don't like the name.
Ah.
It's predominantly in the wine we call Classical White.
Uh-huh.
That's where most of it is. Sits in that wine, Classical White. But I just don't think it's a very nice name. So we have never used that varietal name on our bottles. So
That's
why I don't see it.
Well, you are an exception. I've seen it. Other wineries carry it as a varietal. So.
Well, I congratulate them because I don't know how I don't know why anybody used that name. I think it was developed in New York, and that's a
yeah.
very big name in New York State.
It is,
and so, but there are other nice names to use. You know, we actually, it's kind of like naming a racehorse.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're
right,
absolutely
so
right. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say something about naming wines, and sometimes you get a little far afield. But, you know, we agonized over that. And, of course, we haven't introduced any new wines lately, so we haven't had the problem. But we were struggling with a name for the wine that we call Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And we struggled with it. And you know, Fantasy is a very... has a very beautiful red color, and we put it in a clear bottle with a China red capsule.
Ah.
And it's just a really stunning bottle. You know, it just makes you want to pick it up. And I understand that men like red, so I guess that's part of it. So anyway,
hey, that's
really,
profiling.
It's totally embarrassing to say that it's one of our best-selling wines, but I think it's because, well, first of all, it's in the state system here in Pennsylvania. It's distributed that way, and that just boosts the quantity of it. Not many of our wines are, so that just ups the quantity right there. But anyhow,
what's the residual sugar on the Fantasy?
Oh, my gosh, 8%.
Oh, wow.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's really sweet.
It's really sweet.
Really sweet,
yeah. I don't think my port's that sweet.
Well, we... it's really sweet.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh. And we introduced another one. Well, somebody said that wasn't sweet enough, and it feels like, it's not sweet enough. And so, okay, what should we do? So we had a little extra wine one year. We said, well, why don't we make a red wine that's that same stuff? So we have one, I believe it or not, it's even a little sweeter than that. It's called Grapeful Red. Grapeful Red.
Uh-huh.
And people, they call it other things like Grapefruit Red. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
You see, the first, people don't always read exactly what's in front of them. They just sort of think they see what they see. So anyway, but this wine now, I said, we're not going any sweeter. This is impossible. I can't do this.
What are you looking at residual sugar on this?
That's 10.
Oh, ooh.
See, so, I mean, it's really, and, you know, it was, in some respects, you can sort of use the word creamy for it. I mean, it's so sweet. It has a creamy kind of character about it.
Sweet reds are popular now, though.
Yeah.
They really are. There's a lot of, I every time I go into any store that has wines, I always cruise the wine aisles and check and see what's on the shelves and stuff. Besides the regular ones you see all the time, I'm starting to see a lot more of the sweet reds pop up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was waiting for California to catch on to the fact that they're really missing the boat. You know, because, well, here in Pennsylvania, all the wines, most of the wines in the state stores are dry.
Okay.
And they don't even, most are dry, and they don't even bother to put the sweet wines with anywhere near the dry wines. They have a special section that's called beverage wines.
Oh.
As if wine itself is not a beverage. It mystifies me why they do that, but anyway, so that's where the sweet wines go.
Wow.
Beverage wine section, but...
I hadn't heard that before.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah,
Back to the Some of the Grapes here, though, I noticed you have a Niagara that you use, that come out of New York, the Catawba and Niagara. Are you getting that out of New York? Are you growing that one also?
Well, actually, we grow the Cayuga. It's just that the plants came from New York.
Oh.
And we also grow
Niagara?
Niagara and Concord. Now, I'll tell you, our Concord, though, is not as good as what we can get from Lake Erie area. That's western Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
They have the lake effect there, and their Concord is better than our Concord, but we think our Niagara is better there than their Niagara, but we do get Concord from the Erie area. So.
Also, the Catawba, you grow that, or are you pulling that out of New York?
No, we grow that, too.
Do you also? Wow.
In fact, we're really, up until, a few years ago, we weren't supposed to buy out-of-state grapes more than 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't. So we still don't. I mean, in fact, we don't even buy 25%. It's more like 5%. You know, it's a very small amount that we get from out of state. And even so, even Erie area is within state. But I only say that because now things are in an upheaval here in Pennsylvania, and it has to do with the Granholm decision.
Right.
The Supreme Court several years ago, which basically... the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board says, okay, this decision by the Supreme Court means that we can't play favorites, and we have to, we can't require you to use only Pennsylvania fruit, and we can't require people to make wine in Pennsylvania to be able to sell in Pennsylvania, and things are in a cocked hat at this point. But nevertheless, we persevere, and... We do.
Yeah, it's just the state stores. I've had other people tell me that the state stores there are changing. They are the whole process and everything that's happening there in Pennsylvania is in flux right now because there's lots of changes coming in, and within the future there looks like there's going to be some major changes. So let's just hope it continues on and it doesn't stall or go backward.
Well, you know, it's unclear to me whether the drinking public, really cares about where the grapes came from. It's unclear to me. I don't know. They come in to a tasting room, and they taste a wine they like. Is it important to them to know exactly where it came from? Now, because of this buy local concept, they might care from the extent that they don't want to be exporting jobs someplace else. You know, they don't want to see on a label, they want to see labeled Pennsylvania if it in fact came from Australia. I mean, they don't think they'd be happy with that. But within the limits of the United States, in general, the general drinking public probably doesn't really care as long as they like the way that wine tastes and they can afford it, that's good. But then you've got the people who really look for the differences in terroir, and they really want to know exactly where the grape came from and exactly how it was made. And for those people, that would be important. So for those people, they're going to say, oh, phooey with that guy. He says he's in Pennsylvania, but he's making wine that he got from California, so they don't like that.
But with the labels, the way the labels are done, how they're approved by the government, TTB, we have to have certain information on it and all that. It, you know, and so I think most people will just glance at the label and see that it's Pennsylvania and expect it to be Pennsylvania. They're not going to question other stuff, and if it doesn't say Pennsylvania on it, then they're going to realize that, well, maybe the grapes came from somewhere else, New York or whatever. And, that percentage of people that you just mentioned that are the ones that look for all that stuff, know what they're looking for, and those are the ones that will be a little bit more picky about the whole thing. But overall, I think most people, like you said at the beginning, don't really care.
Yeah, it's why it's hard to make our case to our liquor board here in Pennsylvania. It's hard to make that case. That they are basically, in essence, sort of destroying our concept of what we are and what we do. But I gotta say, you know, there's some wineries who never grow a single grape, and of course there's some vineyards that never make a single bottle of wine.
Right.
So it's, you know, mishmash, and you sort of have to, if you want an experience and you want to know that this is where it's grown. Now, somebody told me the other day, she said, you know why I buy local wine? I said, no, why do you buy local wine? She said, I'll tell you. I buy local wine because it's your baby, and I know it's important to you, and I know you're not going to load it up with a lot of chemicals. Oh, okay, that's a good reason.
Yeah. But no wine is really loaded with a lot of chemicals anyway, so, you know.
No, it's not. But, I mean, but you know, it's the concept that it's going to be, it would be better. It would be better if it's local and somebody is small. It's small. I think she was talking about the small producer as opposed to the major producer, and I don't know. But that was,
well, I have people come into winery all the time, and they say, this from Florida? And I go, yes, oh, good, you know, and because they want a Florida wine. And I, you know, that's because it's unique, it's unusual, it's different. But, you know, when you get into some of these states where they have so many wineries, Pennsylvania being one of them, New York, California, Oregon, Washington, I think they just sort of think it's going to be that state's wines anyway, because there's so many wineries there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. Without doing a survey, which it would not be done properly anyway, because we would have no control over it, then we'll never know the real answer.
Yeah. No, I know. Well, it's curious. It's interesting, though. See, the thing is, there are more and more wine drinkers all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And the real trick, I shouldn't say trick, but the real challenge of it is to how to bring them in at a point where they have a meaningful experience with it. In other words, I think the days are gone when people take off the label and stick it in a book and make their little comments and do all that. I don't think they do that anymore. I think that now people are looking for more information on the web, so they're not going to make their own notes, and they might not remember what they've had. They might not have the right, they might not have a frame of reference for analyzing it specifically. And I think this is where our tasting rooms are really important, as opposed to just putting wines, for example, in retail environments. I think it's really important to have a tasting room, and so that people can actually taste it. And when they, and then you talk about it, and you say, okay, what you're sensing in your mouth is the tannin, and you can notice a little bit of this berry flavor. Oh yeah, I noticed that, and all this sort of thing. I think that's a really critical, crucial thing that we need to keep doing.
Without doubt.
My concern is that's sort of, people are trending away from it, from doing that, you know, doing the actual education part of it.
I think when people go to a grocery store, they know what they're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
When they see a winery, it gives them an opportunity to do that, though. And so when you see the people come into the winery, it's for the purpose of the little bit of education, the little bit of trying something new and looking what they're trying to find something that they're searching for or seeking. And, you know, these are the people that are going to stop and visit at wineries, and the ones who are just going to run down to the local grocery store and buy the same thing every time, their default wine, I refer to it as, they jump in and buy their default wine. Those are the people that it's hard for us as wineries to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be more and more people who are becoming default wine buyers because it's such a big market, but I think because of so many wineries out there, people are stopping by and seeing wineries, so it's something that they can, they're starting to become part of the general idea, oh, there's a winery, let's go see what they've got. So
you're thinking it's the other way. You're thinking there are more people realizing that they can do this at a winery, so they're going to wineries.
I think so.
Okay.
I think the people who buy in grocery stores buy their default wines.
Mm-hmm.
They say, I'm going to pick up a bottle of wine coming home. They're going to run into the store. They're not going to search. They're not going to try anything. They're just going to run in and walk over and pick up the wine that they always buy and go pay for it.
Chris,
and these,
I have to say this. If I didn't have a certain number of default wine buyers among my customers, I'm not sure where.
Yeah, but you're still
I mean?
A winery, though. You're still
I
a winery.
That's
you
true.
Know? And they can taste it. I mean, I have a lot of default buyers that come into me too. I mean, the business is, you know, our repeat customers is what keeps most of the wineries alive, I think, especially the small ones throughout the country. But they still have the opportunity to come in and say, "Is your whatever still here?" I said, "Yes. Would you like to try it and see how it is now?" This is something that the stores can't do. We can offer this. We can talk about it. We can still do this, even though they are repeat customers. And I think this is something that we offer that the stores never will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why more and more people are seeking out wineries and going to wineries. I mean, the number of people that go to wineries is numbers are outrageously high. Every winery I talk to, they start talking about the number of people that have stopped by and stuff. And people are interested in wine. This program, we've got a tremendous amount of listeners because people like to learn stuff about wine. And I think that's what's helping the whole industry. And the more that they learn, the more educated they become about it, and the more that it helps us as wineries talk to them, sell to them, and, you know, all that. So that's, you know, I mean, that's my opinion of it.
Yes. Okay, good. Well, I guess what I have in my mind is thinking about people who are coming along and they go from winery to winery and in a given day. And really, it seems to me that the younger audience, what they're really after is a buzz.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's, I guess, what I was talking about. I'm talking about the younger people coming into the subject, and it's hard to get them to stop and focus on the attributes or the characteristics of a wine because they don't seem to be that interested in it, or they want it to be, I don't know how to explain it exactly. I'm trying to figure out how to reach this younger market.
And if you figure out, call me and let me know, too, because it happens everywhere.
I'll tell you one thing. There's the Ohio Wine Association, and there's a lady by the name of Donnie Winchell. And if you haven't had her on your program, you might want to because, oh, boy, she's really a trip. But every week she sends out these notices about what you can do in your tasting room.
Mm.
And she made a comment about millennials, and she said, your tasting room has to be ready for them because they travel in packs.
Yes, they do.
They travel in groups. You got to be ready for that.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And we know that in our store there were some millennials at one of our wine shops, and they got on the phone. They called their friends from all over the mall. They were all this happens to be in a shopping mall. They called them in, and pretty soon there were 12 people in their tasting wine.
Yeah.
They called them on their cell phone and said, "Hey, come over here. We're tasting wine." I thought, "Oh my gosh." That was so funny to me. I thought that was really
this, this is what happened in California, Napa Valley, and I don't know if I've talked to a few wineries, a few people over the years about this, and Napa Valley had this problem. Napa Valley used to be smaller and not as many wineries. Now they start getting more and more wineries throughout the valley. You start to get a big influx of kids, and I say kids, millennials, coming from San Francisco and that area there, taking limousines and having a designated driver and packing up the SUV with all sorts of friends and everything and going up to Napa Valley just to buzz through the valley and get high for the day and just drink a bunch. And it was killing Napa Valley. It was keeping people away because it was so full of these younger drinkers. And so Napa said, what can we do to stop this? And so they said, okay, we're going to have to start charging for these tastings. And you go into wineries up in Napa Valley now, and you're going to be paying $15, $20, $25, $30 to taste five or six wines. Just because...
Now, that is very interesting what you just said, because that's what our experience is. We finally decided we have to start charging for samples, because it's the only thing that is going to separate the interested people from the
drinkers,
from the casual people, and people who are really interested in the wine. But it's funny you said $25, because we were thinking that 50 cents a sample sounds like it's,
yeah,
it's about what we're going to charge. I mean, this is Pennsylvania, so.
I have nine wines. I charge $3.50 for nine wines. An educational tasting takes about 20, 25 minutes, half hour, and it's $3.50 for nine wines, which is reasonable. I mean, you know, most places around the country, that's about the average price. But you get in places like Napa and stuff like that, they're charging a lot to get in the serious drinker. And then, you know, then they give you a rebate on what you purchase sometimes and stuff. But if you don't purchase anything, and it stopped a lot of those millennials from coming up just to drink for the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was smart, because I think that's what's happening here. It's beginning to happen here.
Mm-hmm. And it's everywhere. It's not just there, it's everywhere. And, you know, and we want these younger drinkers, and they're getting away from the hard booze and stuff like that. They don't want to go to beer, and wine is a nice alternative, but we don't want them to just come in and drink us dry and then say thanks and walk out the door. And if there's any millennials out there drinking, obviously, are listening to the program, obviously you are not those, because you're listening to the program.
Right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, we congratulate you.
Yes.
For not being one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, my. You know, we have a concert series here.
Oh.
And when you were talking about they were getting away from the booze and such, I am, during the July and August, we have what we call Music in the Vineyards. And it's a variety of different bands, and all different age people come. And, you know, it's really nice, and they actually, people bring their own picnics, or we have a food concession, and they can buy a bottle of wine and, you know, just have a nice, relaxing evening. We have some dance patios, and they dance a lot and have fun. So I hired a photographer. I do this every year so that I have photographs for the following year, for the next year. And... he took photographs of this group of young people were really attractive. I mean, the girls were attractive, the guys were attractive, well dressed, all looked really great. And I looked at the photograph, and they had a bottle of rum on the table. And he likes to bracket, so I had like 20 photos of something with a bottle of rum in it.
With rum.
What, you know? Anyway.
That's unbelievable. That's
it's all fun.
That's really sad. When do you get bud break there?
June. It's usually June 1st.
Oh, really? Oh. Are you in a little valley or?
Yes, we are. But we are. We're going to. I think it's going to be a little earlier this year because we had some really warm weather in March.
Yeah, everybody did.
And we thought that our season's going to be earlier, but I don't know.
Then would you harvest?
Oh, you're talking about bud break. I'm talking about blossoming. I'm talking blossom.
Oh, okay.
That's
so bud break is usually a month earlier.
Yeah, we've already had bud break, so okay. Yeah. So that's I'm sorry. Excuse me. Wrong terminology.
Yeah. Bud break is usually, okay, so you're usually getting bud break mid-April then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And then when do you harvest?
The first one, well, we got rid of that grape. That was in August, but so it's usually right around Labor Day. So it's, and that goes through mid-October.
Oh. So, all the different ones, I'm sure they are coming due at different times, which is nice, you know.
Well, yeah, the winemaker didn't like to, we got rid of that one grape because
this is too early.
It was too early. He wanted to go away for Labor Day. What kind of a reason is that to get rid of a grape? Actually, it was, the name of the grape was Aurora.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
And not many people grow that grape either. It has a tendency, when you make it into wine, has a tendency to oxidize very early. I mean,
really?
It's just, oh, yes.
Cold weather grape, isn't it?
It's what?
It's a cold weather grape.
Well, yes, but when you make it into wine, I don't know why. I don't know what it was about that grape that did that, and it drove us crazy. And finally, and every year we'd get less and less of a crop from it, so we decided just take it out. So we took it out and planted Catawba there. So we don't have that one anymore. But that one was always ready like a week or 2 weeks before Labor Day. And anyway, so now we're pretty much Labor Day. That's it. That's when we start.
What's the weather? You know, you say you're in sort of a valley. What's the weather like there? The winter lows, the summer highs, average temperatures, and all that. What's the weather like?
Well, in the winter we can get down to 20, and the daytime is usually in the 40s.
Oh.
Okay, so. It's really excessive. We've had some excessive winters when it gets down to 10 or, you know, less than that. But normally it's anywhere in that range. And the thing about it is, though, that we go above and below freezing. And every given day, you know, the morning it's freezing, in the afternoon it's above freezing, and it goes up and down and up and down. And that's the good thing about having the French hybrids, because they're not as susceptible to damage in that constant freezing, thawing, freezing, thawing, freezing, thawing, you know. So that's a good thing about, and that's the main reason that we planted so many French hybrids. Yeah. But we figure we have here probably, maybe 30 more ripening days than we need in a year to ripen the grapes. So we are a bit humid here. That's the only problem. And our soils, if you talk to a purist, they say, oh, the vines must struggle. Your grapes and your vines will not take good if your vines don't struggle. Well, we are in a very rich farming belt here. And we probably get too much vigor in our foliage, in our vines. So we do have to thin the vines, and we have to thin the clusters because it just gets to be excessive.
So very, very fruity then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of fruit. But you know what? I'm supposed to be talking to you about the Hershey-Harrisburg wine country.
No, you don't have to. You talk about your winery. We've talked about the Hershey area.
You already did that.
Mike might have told you. You need to talk about it. We've talked about it. We're familiar with the Hershey area wine country and the Hershey area wine trail and all that stuff. We've talked to other people about it, but you are one of the aspects of the Hershey area, so therefore that's why we're talking about the winery.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, comment something about a wine trail, if you want to hear it. Do you want to hear my comment?
Sure.
We were talking about how to name it, and they want to call it a wine trail, and I said, you know, I think it should be wine country. And I said, for this reason, I said, there are people who see the word wine trail and they have no idea what in the heck that might be. Because the other ways in which they hear trail are, for example, a hiking trail. All right. So what they think of hiking trail, that wooded imagery comes to mind. Or they think of a jet trail, and that's like a cloud that comes behind the jet as the jet goes through the sky. And so, if you're going to make that association, you say, okay, it must be a bottle of wine with a trail of wine flowing from it. You know, so I said, I don't think that wine trail is good. And I said, besides which, if you do a wine trail and you look at this map, you think, okay, the wine trail is this event where I go from one winery to the other, to the other, to the other, to the other, as many as I can in a day, and then I'm on the wine trail. So I said, it really needs to be wine country.
So they listen to you.
So they listen to me. Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, my goodness gracious. What a day. And, yeah, anyway, but we call it wine country. So.
Ah.
Hershey-Hersburg Wine Country.
The Wine Country, well, you know, everybody thinks of them as a trail. This is, you know, but that's
yes.
a unique approach, though.
Mm-hmm. And I like it because it just says, okay, here's an area in the countryside that has wineries. And the imagery, I think, is really wonderful, you know.
That's true. That's very true. It's
yeah.
And it gives a different ring to it because you see trails everywhere, and so that gives a different ring to it. So, yeah. So, good idea.
Well, anyway, I just thought I meant.
You're not in an AVA there, are you?
We are.
Oh, you are?
Believe it or not, we are. We are practically the only winery in the AVA, and our title is a Lancaster Valley. Now, Lancaster Valley is a belt that goes through our county. It has rich limestone soils that are well-drained. And it has, of course, the same climate. It's not that big of an area, but it has the same climate. But we are in an AVA. And
wow.
We've had that ever since, almost since the day we opened. And for that reason, we can use estate bottled on our wines. And most of them do say, estate bottled, yeah.
Oh.
Now, sadly, Walt's Vineyards, as I said, is near us, and we thought for a long time that they were in our AVA. It turns out they're just slightly outside it. And we said,
that's what Pat told me when I talked to him last week. I asked him. He says, no. He says, we just miss it. So.
Yeah, yeah. And because... Well, shoot, I liked having them in it. I think they make some very, very nice wines. They really do. And I really liked having them be in our AVA. So that's too bad.
I'm afraid liking them in the AVA is not one of the criteria.
No, are you in an AVA?
No. Florida is not an AVA. We don't have any AVA associations at all down here because Florida's... actually, we've never pursued it. We never tried it. I guess we can say, you know, if you want just a sandy soil with horrible, horrible nutrients and all that, then we can get an AVA based on that. But otherwise, no, we're not.
Well, so what do you put on your label, or don't you have to because you have fruit wines?
I have more than fruit wines. I have a red, a white, and all that. We just Florida. I guess Florida is the closest thing we get to any type of AVA. We just Florida wines.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really not designated as an AVA, so.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess listeners probably know this, but we could, for example, on our label put of Pennsylvania.
Right.
If we blend with another state, we should say America.
Right.
American wine. We could put county, municipal. What am I going to call that? Designations we have divided into counties in our state, so I could say, for example, Lancaster County, because everything grown in here would be Lancaster County. And we can put, if it's a state bottle, we can put Lancaster Valley. And I've got to tell you, when we first started, and you started using it, I had some friends who really poo pooed it, and they just guffawed and said, "What do you think you are, Napa Valley? You're missing." They're missing the point. You don't have to put the word Napa in front of it for it to have meaning.
That's true. That's true. That's part of the education we need to, you know. This is why I always ask people about AVAs when I talk about AVAs as much as I can on the program, because people need to be aware of what they are and what they do. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes it interesting.
We talked a little bit about the state stores and all that. Government, you love, hate, indifferent, want to hug them, want to kill them. What your opinion of state and fed government as far as treating the wineries? What's your thoughts on them?
Well, we haven't seen anybody from the federal government in a very long time. I mean, they show up every now and then. If there was a change in labeling, and you're supposed to, when last time we saw them was when we had to put the government warning on about drinking wine and being pregnant or operating machinery.
Right.
And they stopped by to see if we were in compliance, and that was the last time we saw them. So how long ago was that, 15 or 20 years ago? I mean, that was a long time. So we don't really have much interaction with them. The state is a different story because of all the things that are going on here right now in terms of them licensing California producers to sell directly to the public, and they're giving them a license as if they were a Pennsylvania winery.
Oh,
didn't the Waltzes talk to you about that? Ooh, because there's one that opened up very close to them. And here at Nestle Vineyards, we sort of are a little bit immune from it, but not completely, because some of our customers talk about it. But they did, yeah. And this I'm not going to mention the name because I don't want to publicize it, but the situation is that this couple who lives in Lancaster and has for a number of years had, I guess, always wanted to have a winery. So what they've said is they searched the world over and found the perfect place, and it's in California, and it's a vineyard and a winery, but what it really is a custom crush operation.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that it's a big winery that makes wine for them, along with maybe, I don't know how many others, 10 or more other wineries. And in that big operation, they have a little area that's designated as the area for this particular brand. And so the vineyards, I think, are also a co-op vineyard. And this is how they did it. So they stick their name on it and say it's made at their winery, but it's just a trade name that was registered for that other bigger place. And uh-huh. Set the winery in here, wine in here, and set it up in a retail store. And it's, at first we thought nobody in their right mind would do something like that. but
how do you really feel about it?
Yeah, so they did, and it was very disconcerting. They thought how many more there are going to be, but that's too bad. And then Pennsylvania does not vet those things. I mean, they don't. There's no way they're going to go out to California and inspect the premises. They do for us here. If a winery wants to open in Pennsylvania, they go inspect the premise, but they're not going to fly somebody out to California to do that. Neither will they send somebody to Canada to make an inspection. And the people in Pennsylvania that are close to the Canadian border are having trouble because these wines are coming, they're setting up wine shops in Pennsylvania without ever even having to prove that they have a winery in another state. I mean, it's just a name on a piece of paper. So this is definitely a problem. Yeah, we're just really discouraged.
Well, that's Pennsylvania laws, though. I mean...
Well, the law says that if you just before you rang in, I was trying to find, I was trying to look up that law and exactly how it's stated. It requires that if you make less than 200,000 gallons, you can be considered a limited winery because you're limited by the 200,000 gallons. You have a right to sell directly to the public and a bunch of other things that you can do. You can sell at festivals. You can sell at 5 board-approved locations. And there are things you can do. So in theory, when they apply this thing about being less than 200,000 gallons, they're applying it to any winery anywhere. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's just really hard to wrap my head around it. We said, you know, this is really a heck of a note because the law is written the way the law is written, and yet the board, the regulatory board, just changes, basically changes the law without the law being changed. I said, if we want to change the law, we have to go through this whole process of getting everybody, all the legislators on our, you know, to vote yes and get through all the channels and the committee hearings and all this. But the board, all they have to do is say, okay, this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah, what's an interpretation of it is basically what it is, you know.
Yep,
you,
that's right.
As long as you're below 2,000 cases or whatever your criteria is, then you can open up a winery regardless of where the grape's from. It's not a designation of where the grape's from. It's just the fact that you're under this limitation, and that's all it takes. And so,
That's right. And I have referred to this as regulatory overreach. I do think that that's what's going on here. And the problem is, in anything that you want to do, if you have to, if you want to take a suit or complain about anything, it takes dollars to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even clear among other fellow Pennsylvania wineries that it's the wrong, it's not clear that it's the right thing to do, because there are some wineries in our state who are making wines as a custom crush kind of situation for wines outside of Pennsylvania. So you see, it depends on what the what kind of regulation we put through as to who gets hurt and who doesn't. And it's just a really difficult, it's a difficult thing to think through and get through. So
if you start making rules and regulations to stop those wineries from coming in, it could definitely and probably will affect the wineries that are already in the state.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yes, and then that's going to really create a problem for lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
I will
wow.
say this. I will say this. The other thing that's afoot is to I can't think of the name of it. It's a specific word about the Liquor Control Board. Split up the Liquor Control Board. Get rid of the state system.
Right.
And sell all the state stores. I can't remember what the word is, but anyhow. So this is a funny situation, too, because we, as I mentioned before, we have one wine that we sell to the state stores, and actually it's one of four. And when we... What all we have to do is send wine to the warehouse, and that's all we do.
Uh-huh.
And they order once a month, and it's a lot of wine, and we send it, and we get the order, we package it specially and whatever, but we send it there, and it's there. If we were to lose that system, we would have to go individually to all of the different retail stores.
Oh,
get them to buy our product and stock it in their shop. So, this, of course, we're one of the larger wineries in the state. So, all the other larger wineries that would have the same problem. But this is another one of those situations that's difficult to wrap your head around, because like, what would be the ramifications of deregulating? And I think most of the smaller, really small wineries would like that, because right now they can't get their wines into the state stores because they don't make enough.
Right.
And so they would like to have other retail outlets, but it's not working for them. And so I don't know the answer to that. But anyway, we would do what we would have to do if it deregulated. I think there are a lot of the basic people in the state, a lot of the wine consumers would like to have individual shops. They perceive that they would have probably better prices and probably better selection. But I don't know. And
That's an interesting dilemma. I mean, I can understand the why you would not want to ship each one individually. Mm-hmm. It would be almost cost prohibitive.
Well, it's not just even shipping to every individual store, which that could be an issue. It's just even convincing them to stock the wine.
No.
See, now, as it is, we send it to the state. We're in a certain region. We're in the middle of the state, and that's our region. And that's about all we make enough wine to supply. But we can't really go into the Philadelphia region, which is bigger, of course, because there are more people living in Philadelphia. But we don't have enough supply for that. So we're in the middle region, and it goes into, like, maybe 200 different retail shops.
Wow.
So now you think about that, and you think, okay, now all of a sudden it's deregulated. Now all those little shops are owned by somebody who's different entities, and some of them probably would be owned by one company. I don't know, depending on how they regulated at that point, as to say how many a certain company can own, how many retail stores a certain company can own. But then you have to go each individual company, each of those individual 200 places, and say, please stock my wine.
Right. Okay. Either that or, again, not do it to all of them, just pick a small area and then... But either way, you're going to have somebody out on the road talking to those people, delivering it, doing all that stuff, which is going to be a royal pain.
Yes. Yep.
Huh.
You know, our winemaker is a pretty funny guy. He said one day, you know, if the PLCB didn't exist and the Tax and Trade Bureau didn't exist, somebody would have to invent them because we need those organizations.
That's true. No, that's very true.
No. That's sort of interesting, and I have to remind myself of that when I get really frustrated with these situations, because I say, yeah, you know, you can't have an industry without some kind of rules. So, you can't do anything in our society without some sort of rules.
So it's out of rule, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it still drives you insane. Each state doing their own rules and everything is sometimes just gets out of hand.
I'll bet you get a lot of requests to ship wine out of state.
Yeah, quite a few. Yeah, really.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine so, because you're making wines that you don't find everywhere. I mean,
right. And we're Florida, and we get a lot of tourists.
Yes. Okay. So, are you? Licensed in all the states you think people might order wine from?
Yes, we also are distributors. We have a distributor's license.
Ah. Okay.
Which is something that, you know, we got years ago, and we're able to hold all three. We were grandfathered in, although Southern Beverages for years been trying to get it away from us, and they haven't been able to. But yes, we have all three.
That's impressive. That's impressive. And the reason I asked the question is, if you wanted to ship to somebody here in Pennsylvania, would you be able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because you
are a licensed distributor.
Licensed in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Because you're a licensed distributor in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Or you're a licensed distributor in Florida. I'm confused, but anyway. Okay, but for us, we figured if we want to go and send wine to Oklahoma, all right, then we have to be registered in the state of Oklahoma.
Right.
And likewise, for any state we want to ship into, and we said, this seems like a lot of extra paperwork and a lot of time, and is it really worth it? But I think we're getting now enough volume of people asking. And just today, somebody from New York State called, and she said, well, why can't you just do it for us, because I'm your neighbor up here? Said, okay, well, that works. I mean, there's some rationale for that. But
Well, a lot of wineries will look at the states that they ship to the most and get their pay the fees for that state to ship there. I mean, if you have people coming from, let's say, South Dakota, and you maybe see three people a year from South Dakota, and then once you ship it to them, it's not worth the $50, $100, $150, whatever it is that South Dakota charges to be able to ship there. So, therefore, it's not worth it to you. But if you have New York and you see 200 people a year that want it shipped to you, then it's worth paying that fee to ship it to New York.
Yeah, I have to do some more research on that, because I'm thinking there are probably some listeners who would like to be able to take advantage of this, you know, to be able to get some wine from someplace. And my understanding too is that I'm hoping at some point before too long, a lot of these state restrictions will loosen up a bit, because I think the future is a QR code on a bottle of wine, for example. And you take your iPhone and you zap it, and it takes you to the website, and you order the bottle. You're sitting in a restaurant. You're drinking this bottle of wine. Oh, isn't this great? And instead of writing down the name of it and trying to find it somewhere, you just find it on your, you know, your iPhone, and then you place an order, and you receive it in 2 days. I mean,
yeah, right. That would be ideal.
Think about that. Isn't that neat? Wouldn't that be neat?
That would be. That would be fantastic, having every bottle with a little QR on it, and everybody can just at any time order it. That would be but each state, I mean, the federal government turned it back over to the states. The Supreme Court ruling basically said states take care of it, and as long as every state wants their little control, then I don't ever see that happening, I'm afraid.
No. I mean, it could still happen, but the company has to be licensed to do it. You know, that's it.
Yeah. No, that's true. Again, back to money.
Yeah, right. Money. Oh, my goodness. What makes the world go round?
Money.
Oh,
back
dear.
To money. Do you use oak or stainless steel?
Stainless steel.
Everything?
Everything.
Oh, wow. Good.
We do have, well, I shouldn't say everything, because some of it is lightly oaked. But I went to a meeting with wineries, and this one winery near us, I don't know what their problem is. It's just always cranky. And we're sitting there, and he looked at me and said, we were talking about the concept of doing barrel tastings as a theme for this group of wineries, and I said, well, we don't use barrels. And he said, you don't use barrels? And I said, no, you know we don't use barrels. He's been in business as long as we have. You know we don't use barrels. And he said, well, then you're not making real wine.
Whoa!
Oh, my word. I thought, oh, my goodness gracious. Well,
and we're trying to educate the people out there. Maybe we need to educate the wineries first, huh?
Well, I will tell you, because we do like an oaky flavor in wine, some of the wines, our winemaker uses, hang on to your hat, here we go, oak chips.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do. Oak chips,
yeah.
Oak logs, oak dust, I mean, all that's used.
All that, yes. But that, for some people, is a dirty word because it's not a barrel. And, you know, the thing about a barrel is the some wineries invest a lot of money in these barrels, and the first year they use them, they get this really great, strong oak character. And the next year, they get a little less strong. And the next year, a little less. And the next year, a little less. And pretty soon, at some point, the barrel can even get contaminated. They can't even get rid of the bugs that are in there. I mean, you know,
right.
These organisms.
Get bread, tar, all that stuff, yeah.
Right? And so they have to get rid of the barrel anyway, and they have to keep investing all these dollars in new barrels, you know.
Right.
And it just seems strange. Now, my dad was the one who built the winery, and he was a carpenter. And when he built the winery, we said, well, you don't have a room for barrels. He said, nope. He said, I don't want a wine that ends up tasting like a 2x4. And I thought, he should know, although even though you're a carpenter doesn't mean you've eaten a 2x4, but
right.
even at that, he knew what it smelled like, and he didn't like that in wine. So we have no barrel room. That's all it is. Yep.
You'd be surprised. A lot of wineries don't use oak. They use chips or, you know, dust or planks or logs or, you know, any number of ways. We find that a lot. Mike, are you, I'm looking at the website, you have any questions for Judy?
Yeah, there was something I was going to bring up. I was looking at your lawn concert page and see what kind of events you host there. And you have a thing on here, it says minors are not admitted to the lawn events, I guess, the concerts. Are they allowed in the winery at any point? And I was wondering why they weren't allowed in the event, the venue, but then I saw on the other page that it's the Pennsylvania liquor laws, and even if they're accompanied, they're not, you have to be 21 or older, I guess, is what it is, right?
It's It's not a law. The law in Pennsylvania is you have to be 21 to drink. Okay, you have to be age 21 to consume alcoholic beverages. But you know, children are welcome to come with their parents for a tour, a winery tour, and you know, during our regular hours. What happened was, now this concert series is in its 30th year, and it was about, I think about 10 years ago that we realized parents were not watching their children. They were treating, we get upwards, but it depends on the weather and it depends on the band, but we can get 2,000 people here for a concert.
And
they treated like all 1,999 of the other guests as babysitters for their child. So this isn't working. And then they would have them sitting right under the loudspeakers, and I think a child will lose his hearing before he's 10 years old. And they're just things. And I have to tell you, because I thought it was sort of funny, the thing that really put the whole clincher on the whole thing was when a man came in and asked us to warm up his baby bottle because his wife had to feed the baby and he needed to have it warmed. And my sister was there, and she got traumatized because she's never warmed a baby bottle in her life, and so that's the end of that. All during any time we're open except for the concerts, children are welcome to come. Now, we don't admit people under age 21 because, again, parents weren't watching them, and in Pennsylvania, we are liable if a person underage has something to consume. They consider it our fault because we weren't watching that person, and we can't watch 2,000 people. So, you know, we just had to do that. So, anyway, that was a good question.
I just wanted to get some clarification on that. And also, when you were talking about the Lancaster Valley AVA, you're the only winery in the AVA, or are there others? You're just the only one in that particular area?
We're the only one in that Lancaster Valley AVA.
There
is another vineyard in our AVA. It's called Landy Vineyards, and years ago they made wine, but they stopped. They gave up the winemaking function and just grow grapes. They are also in that AVA. Yeah.
Hmm. So, okay.
Two vineyards.
Good question, Mike.
Two vineyards in this.
Well, and then I was going to touch up on a topic that you were talking with Ron about on the distribution to each state. I don't know if this is what you were trying to get from Ron, but Ron, as far as your distributorship, do you have to register in each particular state you want to sell to? Like if you want to sell to Pennsylvania, you have to. Is that an additional fee? You have to, you know, if you don't want to sell to North Dakota, you don't register in North Dakota, or does your distributorship cover every place?
Yes, we have to register.
Wow. So it's not a blanket where because you're a distributor, you can just automatically sell to anyone. You still have to register with each individual state.
It gives us more leeway, though, because we are distributors.
Right. Oh, okay. Wow. Put that one.
We're in a different category. We're not just a retail winery that sells. We are a distributorship, and the distributorship goes into a different category here.
Okay, good. Other than that, I think that was it. That's all I have.
All right.
Good.
Very good. Thank you. Judy, anything else before
I don't know where your listeners are, but if you get to Pennsylvania, you know, stop by and see us, because it really is a nice area. It's a beautiful farmlands and nice area. There's a lot going on here. This actually, we're in we're near Hershey, Pennsylvania, but we're in a little closer to Lancaster, and that's the home of the Amish Pennsylvania Dutch, and we've got you know, museums and things to do and lots of fun.
Winery City. Well, give us all of your information, the website, the address, phone numbers, email, Twitter, Facebook, everything about Nestle Vineyard and Winery Estate. So if people want to get in touch with you, they may do so.
Right now, verbally. Okay, here we go.
Yes.
All right, here we go. Okay, I call Nestle Vineyards, 140 Vintage Drive, Bainbridge, PA, 877-718-17502. And if you want to call us, it's 717-426-3514. I'm here right now. We're not open right now. But anyway, I'm here at my desk. Okay.
But you're on the phone. No.
Yeah, but I'm on the phone. And well, this is another phone. I didn't give you that number. So that's okay. Anyway, let's see what it is. A web, www.nisleywine.com. And Nisle is spelled N as in Nancy, I S as in Sam, S as in Sam, L E Y. And if you would like to email me, you could do that at judith@nisleywine.com. And we don't have a Facebook page.
Don't? How about a Twitter?
We don't have Twitter. We will be getting these up and running before too long.
Now, I have a question. You were just talking about how great it would be to have a QR code, but you don't have a Facebook page or Twitter?
Isn't that incredible?
Yes, yes.
But really behind the times. This is what happens when you've been in business this long. You turn around and say, oops, what happened?
Exactly.
What happened here? We're working on it. But we have a very good person. Part of it is finding somebody who can do all these things for you. Minimal amount of aggravation and actually do it correctly. So that's part of it. And
it kind of reminds
we'll get there.
It kind of reminds me of our discussion Ron and I were having after the last show about because the wineries we've been focusing on in the past few weeks, I guess, has been around Amish country. And Ron and I were talking last week, wouldn't it be interesting to have someone from Amish country on there with us? And then we kept thinking about it. We go, no, that's not going to happen, is it? I mean.
And you do a conference call. In other words, you can do this, you dial into this number. I know about this. You dial into a certain number and you can get 10, 20 people in there talking all at the same time.
Uh-huh.
What?
The fidelity is terrible, I tell you that. You can hardly hear it. Anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was technology or something. Yeah.
But we can't do a conference call. I don't think that's going to happen either.
Can you Skype with your program? With your blog program, can you Skype?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, it's a good thing I don't have my... Is that why you told me to turn on my computer? I don't have a computer at this phone. Anyway, I'm not dressed for Skyping, so... Anyway,
that's why we just do it on Blog Radio. I figured if we had to do this on Skype and people see our pictures and stuff, then nobody would tune in anymore. So,
I don't want to watch this. Oh dear.
That's it. But Judy, thank you so much for taking your time to join us tonight. It was fantastic. You were very informative. We had a lot of fun, and. It was an enjoyable program, so appreciate it. Best of luck to you. If I'm ever up in that area, definitely I will swing by and visit you.
Please do. And thank
Without
you.
Without doubt.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now. All right.
I was on hold for quite a bit of that, but I was listening, taking notes and things, and some of the things she would say, I just started laughing. I mean, she speaks her mind, and it was very funny.
She's very good. She really is. She does. She speaks her mind, and she's very good. I enjoyed that interview.
It was funny. I really did. I'd write something down, and she'd say something else, and I'd just go, oh, my gosh, that was funny.
Yeah, I know. I was
very
laughing,
good.
Too, here. I was holding my hand over on some of the stuff. I was holding my hand over the microphone, so I wouldn't interrupt her. Yes, she was very good. And it was a good conversation.
Very interesting.
It was.
Okay. So we have we're not in overtime, but.
No, we're. I noticed you added the extra half hour tonight on the air, so that's.
That was
good.
A good thing.
Yeah.
But then, let's see what we have. Next week.
We have a lawyer.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Because lawyers.
Go ahead.
He's going to give us information about. the some legalities and stuff that is involved in wineries and things like that. Stuff that people don't think about. So,
okay. This is related to wine and things like that. Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Hmm.
So, should be fine. Yeah, should be fine.
Yeah. Okay, very good.
That's what we got coming up next week. We've only got about 5 minutes left, and so we will. I was going to. I'll wait until next week. Next week, I'll give you a preview, a little teaser here. This is how they do it on radio, isn't it? Next week, I'm going to. I don't get any money from this or anything, but I do get a flyer out of California. It's called Wine Country Classifieds, and they have listed in there different properties, wine properties and vineyards and wineries that are for sale. So I will give you those next week. And so if anybody's out there and has themselves an extra $1 to $5 million laying around, you can buy yourself a winery. There's also one listed for Italy, too. So if you'd like to get one in Italy. But so I got a list of these here. I will California and Washington and there's one for Italy and there's one for Southwest Colorado and different places like that. Now here even Nevada. So nope, that's not Nevada. That's advertising. I looked in the wrong column. That's something else. So we'll talk. I'll give you some winery listings next week and tell you about those. That's always fun. It's a fun little thing. And we'll be talking to our lawyer next week. A lawyer.
Yeah, not our lawyer. The show lawyer.
Yeah, a lawyer. The program doesn't need a lawyer yet. Our lawyer
no.
Yet.
No. No, not yet. All right, very cool. So we'll look forward to that. That'll be on May the 24th. So that'll be good. We'll post that up pretty soon for our listeners. And so we'll see everybody next Thursday, May the 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 6 p.m.
for
the West
Coast.
Okay.
4 o'clock.
There you go. So we'll see you all next time. We'll have the lawyer and Ron will be in with classified properties for sale for wineries. That'll be interesting.
Wineries, yeah.
Yeah. Haven't had that yet. All right. Very cool. We'll do the ending here. And thank you all for tuning in to our show. And we will see you all next week. We'll be closing the show in, you know what? It's the same one.
Okay.
It's going to run right at the closing. Okay. We'll see you all.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's FloridaEstatesWines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.
See, he's gone now. See, there it goes. You in the holding? If he's in holding, he could be, hear me. You in the holding? Well.